It's time to hear from the Green Party with co-leader James Shaw.
This week, I chat with Green Party co-leader James Shaw after some substantial changes to New Zealand's travel restrictions in response to the COVID-19 virus. All travellers except for those from the Pacific Islands will have to self-isolate once landing in New Zealand. A ban on all cruise ships has also been enforced, lasting till the end of June. James also touches on the Election Access Fund, which will improve accessibility for MPs with different access needs and disabilities, along with improving election engagement. However, first, I begin by asking James on these travel restrictions.
Yeah, so on Saturday, the Prime Minister announced that anyone arriving from overseas in New Zealand would have to put themselves into self-isolation for 14 days. And so that includes Australia, which of course is a huge source of traffic. It excludes the Pacific Islands, but anyone who's travelling to the Pacific Islands will have to be medically tested before they go. And that's to ensure that we're doing everything in our power to make sure that the virus doesn't get to the Pacific. So that was the kind of the main part of the announcement. And it's already sort of notably caught a few people out. Chris Bishop, a National MP, and Chloe Swarbrick, of course, PM Stalwart and a Green MP, have both had to put themselves into self-isolation because they were in Australia recently and so on. So they're currently working from home.
These are some of the harshest travel restrictions that have come about in the world. So what's prompted this response?
Well, it's quite simply the advice that we've received about the virality of the COVID-19 virus. If you just look at the mathematics of it, it is moving incredibly quickly, and we did have some restrictions on movements from, for example, Northern Italy, Iran, China, and so on. But the outbreaks are occurring, I think it's up to about 118 countries now, and it just becomes impractical to try and say this, you know, depending on which country you've travelled through. So just saying, look, this is just going to apply equally to all countries made far more sense.
What guidelines are given in terms of those who are self-isolating?
Well, it basically means staying at home and working from home and ensuring that you have as little contact as is practical with other people. It doesn't mean no contact at all, but try and minimise it. It means that when you do have contact with other people, that you should make sure that, you know, you wash your hands before you meet and again afterwards, that you don't have physical contact with them, so don't shake their hands when greeting or anything like that. Just maintain a level of distance. It also just means, you know, making sure that you clean surfaces with a disinfectant sort of before and after and all of that kind of thing. So it's just kind of being really cautious about how you go about things. And I was just going to say things like, getting your supermarket to home deliver where practical, or, you know, that sort of thing, rather than going to a supermarket to get food.
So I guess a lot of concern has risen out of will people actually self-isolate once they arrive in the country? Are there any checks being done in place to ensure people, you know, because self-isolating can be a really difficult process for some, also incredibly isolating process for some. And so what support is being given there?
Well, so over the course of the last few weeks, quite a lot of people have already been in self-isolation because they have come in from places like China or Iran or Northern Italy. And in fact, compliance with that has been really high. There's been a couple of exceptions, but generally those have been tracked as well. And our health officials have managed to track and trace all the points of contact that those people have had. So far it's worked pretty well. People generally seem to be willing to do this because they understand the risks.
In terms of financial support, what has been done there? Because 2 weeks is, for some who might not be able to work from home, or it's a sudden change in people's habits and the way they can go about their routine. So what's been done to support that?
Yeah, look, it is a very significant change. The government has been working night and day and over the weekend to put together a financial support package, and the Prime Minister said yesterday that it was going to be the most significant economic package that will be announced in her time as Prime Minister. Now, that's due out, tomorrow sometime, although I'm not entirely sure when that announcement's going to come, and it's got to go through Cabinet today. So there'll be news about that imminently.
Mm-hmm. And looking a bit more long-term, what are some of the financial concerns that have arisen? Because it will, I guess the tourism industry is something that's been brought up as taking a huge dent.
Yes, I mean the tourism industry is right at the forefront, as is hospitality and other services. And, frankly, the news is not good. The country is going to take a substantial hit on that front. And so the package that we've been working on over the weekend directly addresses those industries that are hardest hit. Tourism's not the only industry to be affected, but it is certainly the one most affected because, of course, it relies on people travelling into the country and around the country. That is the main area of constraint at the moment.
And just looking at kind of recent events, it was unfortunate that someone who was still awaiting test results in Australia was still able to travel to New Zealand. So I was just wondering, has anything been done there to ensure just, more flow of information, that something like that doesn't happen again?
When that was discovered, health officials have gone through what they call a track and trace process to kind of look at all of the points of contact that that person has had the time that they were in public. For example, there's someone working in my office who is 3 degrees of separation away from that person, so 3 points of contact, and already knows about that and has already self-isolated. And so that's actually been I've been quite impressed with how that process has worked, and I think a health official has been onto that really well.
And just moving on forward to the next few weeks, obviously things are changing really rapidly. We see substantial changes just even over the weekend. So in terms of our listeners, what would you say, what should they keep an eye out for?
So I think there's a couple of things. First of all, wash your hands. This is the point the Prime Minister made repeatedly on Saturday, that at the moment, the best thing that you can do is just be super cautious. Make sure that you maintain a distance from people, and I know it's kind of weird, but avoid hugging people or shaking their hands when you meet them, when you've been around people, make sure that you clean surfaces and so on, because the virus can survive quite a long time on surfaces. So it's just maintaining that kind of behavior is the single most important thing that we can do right now. I would keep an eye out for future announcements, because things are moving very quickly and the government is making decisions sort of every 24 to 48 hours based on emerging information and any changes in risk profile. So that's not to say that, there will be another change anytime soon. There may not be, but you just want to stay alert to it. And just to make sure that you've got contingency plans, right? So make sure that you're carrying your laptop with you in case you need to self-isolate and work from home. And so on. So it's just, I guess, an abundance of caution. But otherwise, at the moment, to keep on keeping on.
Mm. A few weeks ago, we saw people panic buying at supermarkets. And so obviously things have changed. We've got stricter travel restrictions. But what's a good balance approach at the moment in terms of how we should be moving through life?
Yeah, there is. I mean, panic buying is a poor response, so don't do it. It's not necessary. First of all, the travel restrictions apply to people; they don't apply to goods and products. So those things are continuing to flow around the country and between countries. And also, when people panic buy, what they're doing is they're depriving other people, who are usually more vulnerable people, from being able to have access to those products. And so I think it's important that you've got to you do your weekly shopping and that you make sure that you've got provisions, just be sensible about it and don't deprive other people of access to essential goods.
And my final question is, in terms of New Zealanders who are overseas at the moment, what support is given in terms of returning them home or providing them support?
Yeah, so there is a on the health.gov website, there is a coronavirus page with advice and a phone number that people can call if they've got further questions. I know that we are making sure that people who are New Zealanders who are currently overseas are able to get home, and it's something that our embassies and high commissions around the world are working really hard on at the moment.
Yeah. We'll move to the Election Access Fund Bill, which was a members' bill that was being passed through by Minister Chloe Swarbrick, who's in the Green Party. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit on that.
The Election Access Bill was originally a bill put together by Mojo Mathers, who was also a Green MP and New Zealand's first deaf member of parliament, so she put it in the ballot, and it got drawn from the ballot just before the last election. Now Mojo unfortunately left parliament at that election, and so Chloe picked it up afterwards. What the bill does is it establishes a fund to be administered by the Electoral Commission, and it's used by any candidate who is running for parliament who has a disability to cover the costs of standing in that election. And so, you know, we've had, for example, well, like I said, we've had Mojo, but we've also had people who are in wheelchairs and have mobility constraints and so on, for whom electioneering is a very challenging undertaking. The fund also will be available for not-for-profit organisations to cover the costs of making election events and materials more accessible, and also the fund can be used by political parties to support the access needs of any members to allow them to participate. So again, you know, our experience in the Green Party is as a voluntary organisation without a lot of money, it can be very difficult for us to cater for disabled persons.
Yeah, very exciting, obviously, with the election coming up this year. What are kind of the specifics of the fund? Are we hoping to... Because currently, how is the engagement in terms of reaching out to those who aren't able-bodied or have disabilities?
Well, the Electoral Commission does a pretty good job of making election materials accessible, but it is one of those areas where the support that's currently available just really isn't up to the scale of the challenge. What this fund should do is just to really support, both candidates and political parties the sort of public in general to be able to incorporate people with disabilities more into the electoral process directly.
That was James Shaw for the Green Party. The Wire.